There is a manga museum in Kyoto, and it's very famous. So a lot of famous manga artists go there. They display their talent, their arts, and the museum has them sign the wall. This has sort of become a tradition. So they sign the wall, probably they draw a picture. This is a very sort of manga thing to do. You're a manga artist, you're not just going to sign your name. You put a little picture up there. A French guy shows up and he does perhaps the most French thing you could possibly do. He shows up and he walks up to the wall and he signs his name on the wall. And then he walks out. Now, this is in a cafe. So ironically, when the staff were like, hey, not only did he like basically graffiti our wall, because all the famous names, the museum asked the artist to sign the wall. So it was part of this, like, you've come, you've done a show, you've put on something, you've talked to people or whatever you've done for the museum. Please sign the wall as a thank you, and it will sit there for all of eternity. This French dude walks up and he just starts signing it and he walks out. They didn't just say like he graffitied the wall when they called the police, because they called the police because he has just vandalized. If you don't have permission, it's vandalism. So he's vandalized this wall. They probably have to try to erase his name or get his name off without damaging the other signatures. So there's actually a whole other sort of process that's going to have to go on there. Part of the complaint was that he didn't buy any food or drinks. So he went to the cafe. He didn't buy a coffee or cake or whatever they sell. And he just walked up to the wall, signed his name, and then started to leave. And I was like, yeah, that is super French. He's like, I'm going to sign my name. They want the famous people to sign their name on the wall. I will if I sign my name on the wall. This is very nice. Yes, very good. And then he walks out thinking, oh, everyone is very happy now. Then he gets arrested. Like, oh, what is happening? The police go, what did you do? And he goes, I signed my autograph. That is an actual quote. I signed my autograph in a black felt tip pen. And of course, he's been arrested. He says he's visited Japan many times. That doesn't make you a famous artist. Probably he's visited that museum or something like that multiple times. That doesn't make you a famous artist. None of the things he's done as an artist, because he claims to be an artist, has got him into a position where they actually would ask him to sign the wall. So this was vandalism, graffiti, unwelcome, and very French. To just be so presumptuous to think, like, of course they want my name because I'm a famous artist that no one's heard of. I also enjoyed in the article they didn't publish his name. So if he was an artist at all, he didn't receive any sort of fame from this article or this action that he did. And since we're talking about being presumptive, NHK is a big news service in Japan. They do all the news, it's like national broadcasting. They do it in multiple languages. So they contract out news stories that are going to be read on the radio in other languages, so like Korean, Chinese, stuff like this. The NHK news broadcaster doing a Chinese language broadcast did a story about the Senkaku Islands. The Senkaku Islands are a series of disputed, small disputed islands. China claims them for their own, Japan claims them from their own. That's where sort of the impasse occurs. In the Chinese version of the story, the Chinese announcer just went ahead and claimed those for China. So, and if he's essentially officially speaking on behalf of NHK, which does often speak on behalf of the government of Japan, as a representative saying, but we of course all know, I don't know what the exact words, they didn't give me the exact phrase, but he just said, these islands are, of course, as we all know, part of China, not Japan. I guess he saw an opportunity to just sort of solve this dispute in one go. Like, if I say it on behalf of the Japanese government and it's official because I am speaking a weird sort of 7 degrees of separation on behalf of the Japanese government by delivering news, and then everyone believes it, then it will just become true. So, in a weird way, he was just trying to solve the issue, I guess. Of course, the NHK got upset and like sort of complained to the outsourcing company. The Japanese government got upset because they're like, hey, you can't just go ahead and start saying that these islands are owned by China when they're still in dispute. And of course, the Japanese government thinks these are ours. But weirdly, there also might be another secondary claim here by Mexico, because the Japanese Coast Guard was going by these islands. They sort of patrol these islands, was going by these islands, and they see a guy on one of the islands. He's like trying to flag him down. He's like, hey, this is very classic stranded on a desert island kind of stuff. They actually see a guy waving his arms back and forth trying to get their attention. They're like, oh, well, actually there's a bunch of rocks or something. We can't get there. So they have to bring a helicopter in and airlift this guy off the Senkaku Islands, this Mexican guy. They think that this guy was trying to leave Japan but avoid immigration. So he didn't want people to know he was leaving Japan, or he didn't want people to know where he was going. There is something very suspicious about this whole thing, like everything that's been going on. The belief at the moment is that he was trying to leave Japan and get to Taiwan by canoe. Now, I was going to try to calculate how far it would take, you know, to paddle from Japan to Taiwan in a canoe, like the average speed of a canoe and stuff. And then I was like, well, that's the kind of thing that I'm interested in. I don't know if people are actually interested in that stuff. Like, do people actually want to know that kind of stuff? So I didn't do that. I also like was trying to organize like five things this morning. We've just had our vacation, and that takes a while to get back in the groove. That's actually maybe the first problem of doing a podcast every week, is when you take a week or 2 weeks off, getting back into it's actually quite hard. What am I talking about? I'm just basically claiming that this is not as good as it could be, because I didn't do the work that I wanted to do, but I was too lazy to do. I'm now just sitting here calling myself lazy. This is sort of a pre-apology for the quality of the podcast today. This guy's been arrested. He left. They didn't actually tell us what kind of visa either. There's a bunch of information that's lacking from the story, which I would like. What kind of visa was he on? So is leaving the country like a big deal? If he's on a tourist visa and he leaves, that's bad. Because governments very much want to know where you are at all times. But at the same time, I don't know. Why did he want to get out of Japan and get to Taiwan without anybody knowing? Why did he think a canoe was a good idea? That's actually an interesting question, because if I was going to try to get from Japan to Taiwan, I want a boat, not a canoe. How much food did he have with him? So this always goes back to the other research that I didn't do. How long would it take you to paddle from Japan to Taiwan? How much food would you need? Was he going to fish on the way there? So many questions. That's really what it comes down to. So many questions about what this guy thought and how he thought it was going to work out. Because if you said, Peter, you can canoe from Japan to Taiwan, I don't think you can. I think you get pulled out to sea. I think there'd be a storm. We're like, have a typhoon coming right now. If he was out there during then, in a lot of trouble. He didn't get past the Senkaku Islands, which is, you know, northwards of Japan going towards Taiwan, but also didn't even come close. This guy's got bad planning. I think that's just maybe the thing. He's not going to take over the Senkaku Islands because he's obviously worse at planning than I am. But I was smart enough to, you know, not get in a canoe today. A man has formed what can only be called the smallest union, a Yamato Transport Company. This is a just delivery service. It's like DHL or any of the ones you would know. They partner with Amazon in Japan. They just deliver stuff. You get like three or four different companies that just deliver stuff in Japan. There's Black Cat, Yamato are the two that come to mind right away. He's a warehouse worker, and he went on strike on August 19th because of working conditions. I didn't even really think that you could go on strike by yourself. That's an interesting concept. Like, I am going to form a singular union and go on strike alone. Like, you would actually call that taking a day off. If it's only one person, it's not a strike, is it? I don't know. It's just an interesting concept, because he is officially on strike, because what he did is he joined the general union. Japan has this like weird conglomeration union of other unions. And he basically joined that and said, I'm going on strike. I want you to help and represent me and support me. And they did. And he said, because of the working conditions. Now, the working conditions in this warehouse do seem to be horrendous. So I actually right now am full sympathy for this man. I think he is right in going on strike by himself in the smallest union possible. The average temperature in the warehouse was plus 40 degrees every day. And he said, that puts me in physical danger. That's like heat stroke. You could collapse. And, you know, basically, yeah, you cannot be just going around in a sauna all day. I don't know how big this warehouse is, but it's just basically a big greenhouse cooking in the sun all day. Japan this summer has been exceptionally hot. Also humid. It's actually, the heat alone isn't that bad, but the humidity, there was a tangent. I was walking home from the train to my house, and it's about a 15-minute walk, and it felt like I was walking through moisture. That's how humid it was, which meant by the time I got home, I was completely drenched in sweat, and I had to just immediately take a shower. Essentially, if you walk anywhere at the moment in Japan, you have to take a shower right afterwards. But of course, you can't just take a shower every place you go. We have a typhoon. It was supposed to come yesterday, supposed to come today, supposed to come tomorrow. Now it's being predicted on Friday because the path is changing. Often after typhoons, the weather is a little less humid. So that's what I'm hoping for. But I'm honestly not counting on it. He was taking headache medicine and he went to the doctor. And the doctor said, you have like severe signs of heat stroke. You are clearly in actual physical danger. This man's in his 50s. That's not to say that a man in his 50s can't handle the heat, but he used to be a delivery driver. He's now working in the warehouse. And he's like, you guys are trying to kill me. He's asked for air-conditioned clothing and management refused. So in Japan, you'll actually see a lot of outside workers wear these jackets and they're very puffy and they have like a little fan in the back corner. And what they're actually doing is circulating cool air in the jacket. So it looks hot. Like if you're on the outside and you see this jacket, this big puffy jacket, it looks like a puffy down jacket. And it's big and it's puffed up because the air is blowing around, but it's actually blowing around cool air and it's keeping you cool. He said, give me one of those. Management, of course, said no. He said it was 40 degrees plus every day. He took pictures of the thermostat. And the claim from management was that the thermostat was broken and it was 36 degrees. Honestly, still way too hot. If you're doing physical work in a warehouse, 36 degrees is too hot. You need some air conditioners on in there. So then he went on strike. He actually had support from the sort of a national union type thing. Now the office is installing fans, spot coolers, and water stations. And I think they're also going to put out like salted candies to help replenish his electrolytes and salt or whatever. The single man, smallest union, is successful to a degree. I think, of course, we would prefer air conditioning so that the whole warehouse is just cooler overall and doesn't have to deal with all these like spot fans and stuff. But compared to nothing, this is a big step forward, especially when it seems like management was trying to do nothing at all and just tell them to tough it out. Back in 2019, I actually don't know if I did this story. I now forget when Ninja News Japan started. It has to be more than 5 years ago. So it has to have been on during that period. I was certainly podcasting that time. I don't know when Ninja News Japan started. I know how many episodes I have, but of course, it's not like I do 52 episodes a year, so I can't just like do the math. I can do approximations because I have weeks off and stuff. Basically, I think I get about 50 episodes a year, probably less. Anyways, we're in the 300s now. So yeah, it has to be. Anyways, I remember this story. I don't remember if I did it on Ninja News Japan. That doesn't matter. Back in 2019, there was a speech by then Prime Minister Abe. He's giving a speech. And this lady is like, I'm going to heckle. She starts shouting stuff out at him. And the police take her and remove her from this for heckling the prime minister. Then the police followed her around for an hour, which is sort of a form of intimidation. Anyone following you around for an hour, that does have an impact. So she said, by stopping me from heckling the prime minister, you've inhibited my freedom of speech. And in Japan, they call it freedom of expression, but it's the freedom of speech is sort of the standard phrase. And by following me around, that is psychological intimidation, which the police are not supposed to do. So she sued the government, got rejected like five times, kept going up a notch. She gets to the Japanese version of the Supreme Court. Five judges unanimously agree that the police overstepped. This had a psychological impact leading to depression. This leads to psychological pressure and inhibiting freedom of expression. And they're giving her 550,000 yen. So it's $500,000 yen. Again, Japan, the litigation. So again, because we're doing it in yen, $500,000 yen sounds like a lot. It's not that much money. Like it's not certainly enough money to change your life. Any victory in a Japanese court is a moral victory. They don't do payouts like North America. They don't do like emotional damages don't tend to be part of a settlement in Japan. So if I try to sue my company for, let's say, unpaid wages of $10,000 and then $20 million for the harassment I experienced, I will probably get $10,000. I'll get the material payment, but the psychological aspect often is not taken into account. Now they're saying, this case, you get some extra money because that's intimidation. It's not because of your depression. It's not because of the psychological impact the police had on you. It's that they shouldn't have been trying to intimidate you in the first place. So that is what she's getting paid for. You don't get those massive payouts like they do in other countries. I'm thinking, of course, of America. We don't hear about court cases from a lot of other countries. So if you want to sue someone in Japan, you shouldn't be doing it for the money. You should be doing it for moral reasons. And the fact that she went up through like 4, 5, 6 levels of court meant that this wasn't really about the 500. She spent more than 500,000 yen in her life just getting to this point anyways. Nippon Paper has sued Daiyo Paper. So we have the paper wars going on. I actually kind of enjoyed this. For infringement on some of their patents. Now, what kind of patents do they have? This is all about toilet paper. And somehow when you have patents in toilet paper, because my thought is, how many patents can you hold on toilet paper? I guess that's what this is really, this story is going to tell us. Because my thought is, toilet paper, single ply, 2-ply, 3-ply, I guess if we're going to go crazy and go 4-ply, you could have it like textured. You could have pictures on it. But I mean, all those patents have to be done by now, because I've seen, like, if I'm starting my toilet paper company, my paper company, do I need to worry about that? I guess you do. I guess everything has a patent. This doesn't quite work out for Nippon Paper. They're very pissed at the end of this story. The patent is for the toilet paper that is 3 times longer than normal. So you would have a normal roll of toilet paper. I'm putting my hand up the screen and saying this big. This is an audio podcast. So you have a, you can close your eyes. Close your eyes with me for a second. Close your eyes. And just imagine you've got back from the store and you want that rich, deep felt touch of toilet paper, fresh from the plastic bag that it comes in. So you tear it open. And you gently pull forth. And it's a little stiff. It's a little hard at first because they vacuum packed the toilet. It's the 6-roll. Of course, you're going to buy at least 6 rolls, right? And then you pull it out. And you pull it out. And it just that sort of moment of release, that release of that 1 roll of toilet paper that's in your hand. Just imagine that in your mind. You can see it. Imagine that being 3 times bigger. That's what they're talking about. I don't see how you could patent my toilet paper is 3 times longer than other people's toilet paper. The patent there would be application. Here's toilet paper. It's normally like X amount of meters long. This one times 3. Like, that's it. I don't see how you have to patent that. I guess they're trying to protect that we've made long toilet paper. If anyone else makes long toilet paper, they got to pay us money. That's kind of what this is about. The patents are for paper that is 2.5 to 4.4 times longer than normal. So I guess if I made one that was 4.5 times longer, patent doesn't apply anymore. Or maybe I've just had an idea and I could apply for a patent for a 5 times longer toilet paper. Their claim is that the depth and area of the dents in the uneven surface are within the range specified by the patent. So I guess this has to do with the structural integrity of the paper itself. That when you make it longer, you have to do things to make sure it doesn't like collapse in on itself, create a black hole and suck everything in the universe with it. Daiyo countered with, nuh-uh, different. And the judge went with Daiyo. They said, yes. The things you're claiming, the range of pattern, the structural integrity, that doesn't actually mean anything. And so now Nippon Paper is saying they will appeal. They're unhappy with this. They think they are infringing their patent. So they're going to appeal. The paper wars are on, my friend. And it's coming for all of us. There is a company called Orient Industry. Now, I know Orient as a watch company. This is different. I don't want to mix up my two Orient companies. Orient, the watch company, I quite love the Orient watches. I have a solar-powered one. It's called the Neo 90s Panda. It's a very nice watch. It's about $200. Reasonably priced. That's one of the reasons I like Orient. They have very nice watches, reasonably priced. Solar power means you never change the battery. We're not talking about that company at all. We're talking about Orient Industry, which has been making love dolls since 1977. So the founder, way back in 1977, said, like, love dolls are gross. They're these, like, blow-up dolls. They don't feel good. They're made of vinyl or whatever, plastic, and they don't feel anything. So he's like, we're going to make a high-quality one. It's going to be made of silicon. Silicon in the 70s, essentially a new space-age material. And the price of one of his love dolls in the late 70s would have been equivalent to the 5 month salary for the average person. So these were incredibly expensive things, but everyone's like, well, this is crazy. You can't sell a love doll to people and it's going to cost half a year's salary. But it was successful because people were looking for quality. And they didn't sell it in a creepy way. They sold it as, look, you have widowers. They need companionship. They're lonely. This will help them. You have people who are socially awkward. This will help them. This will give them an outlet. They had counseling services. They had people who were not judgmental so they could talk about this. And basically they approached it as not creepy. Because even those doll makers, the blow-up dolls, that was always kind of like a creepy joke. It always showed up in movies as like, haha, you'll have sex with this thing. He was trying to say, like, there are people in the world who need this kind of thing, and I want to make the best thing possible. So a very unique philosophy, which is pretty nice. You've actually probably seen them. They have this sort of uncanny, the very modern ones have this uncanny valley realism to them because they don't move and they're just sitting there. But they have like essentially a skeletal structure and then the silicon skin, and it's soft and it's pliant, and then it's positioned. It's like you can articulate the arms and stuff. Like they've put a ton of research, a ton of resources into this. The founder is in his 70s. I think it's close to his 80s now. He says he's going to retire at the end of this year. He's going to retire at the end of this year for health reasons. And because he's going to retire, he's shutting down the company, which I was like, the company's making it sound like this is a good thing. I was thinking like, a bunch of people are going to lose their jobs. And I was wondering like, is it because it's very difficult to helm a love doll company, because you are going to be judged for just being in charge of this company that produces a sex thing. But at the same time, like his philosophy was that there is a need for this to be taken seriously. There is a role for this in society that can help people. We should do that as much as possible. I have a weird respect for that. I may not want one of the products myself, but I have a weird respect for his attitude towards those things. I think that's fair. This is like the people who challenge censorship for pornography in Japan. It's a very difficult thing to do because you're immediately judged. Like, whether you like porn or not, the censorship is the issue. And should it be censored or not? There was one of the guys in one of the parties, again, it's one of the joke parties, the anti-NHK party, and he was saying that if we de-censored Japanese porn because it's so popular in the world, we would make more money. It would be a good stream of income. Looking at it financially, I actually think it's a really good idea. Like, my opinion on porn, positive or negative, is irrelevant. We're talking about financial stability and a product that the people in the world will buy internationally. It's very hard to argue that it shouldn't be de-censored and therefore sold to the world as a better product. I mean, I fully believe in regulations. I believe in safety. I believe in all these other things. You could form small unions. I mean, we've seen that they're successful today. So I don't, but taking that stance in front of the government is a difficult thing. So this guy taking this stance in the world and then just shutting down the company, I'm actually a little disappointed. I would like to see someone take over that company and run it. I'll do it. I mean, I'm just gonna put it out there. I might have to shut down the podcast because I've never run a company before, but honestly, I will adopt the philosophy. I will try to keep it going. If you want to give that to me, I will absolutely take it on. I will take on that responsibility. I'm trying to think of a joke, but I can't. It's actually a really nice thing. I don't know if I want to do this last story. What are we at? We're at 26 minutes. Oh, yes, I see the funny part that I actually, the reason why I want to do this story. So a college student at 11:30 at night walks out onto the street. He's completely naked. Runs up behind a woman and then hugs her from behind. She was just walking down the street. And of course he did it. He said he got in trouble. He got arrested. And he said, I did it to relieve stress. I mean, this is now step by step. I could write the story. I did it to relieve stress. I was stressed out. And this, cause he's a college kid. He's stressed out about exams or something. The funny part to me, the reason I actually wrote this story down is because he fled on a scooter. Now I'm going to cut this story. It's just funny. The image of a completely naked man jumping on a scooter and then driving away is actually very funny to me. But the story isn't, there's not enough. So I'm just going to cut that. He was charged with indecent assault without consent. And I'm wondering if there is indecent assault with consent. Because once you consent, it's not indecent assault anymore, is it? I guess the police can prosecute you on behalf of a victim even if the victim consented. I guess probably if someone's underage. Yeah, this last story is a mess. I think I'm just...
You can't catch me.
Again, I think maybe you have the same idea as me. It's just like the dude hugs a chick, runs. I imagine him fully leaping into the air behind the scooter, landing on the scooter and just going, boom. Like there's an image there that's very funny. And then he gets arrested, which means he was naked on the scooter when he got arrested. And the police would just be like, hey, let's look for a naked guy on scooter.
I imagine his dick flopping wildly in the wind.
Helicoptering. And then he gets torque and starts to lift off. Yeah. The police are just, what are they on the lookout for? Naked guy on scooter. Hey, there's a naked guy on a scooter. Let's pull him over. He would have gotten arrested for being naked anyways. Like that in itself was enough. You were naked in public. So that's indecent exposure or something like that. So now you're going to get arrested for that. All right. I'm just going to end there.